Egypt has long faced economic challenges, and the conflict in Gaza has further complicated matters. But under a new agreement with the IMF, Egyptian authorities have committed to bring down inflation and the trade deficit, as well as move to a more flexible exchange rate.
And so the efforts to date that the authorities have done have stabilized the economy. And this is very positive. But now there's actually a significant task at hand, which is economic transformation. I'm Ivana Vladkova-Haller, and I'm currently the mission chief for Egypt.
The new agreement under the Extended Fund Facility Arrangement will provide up to $8 billion to support Egypt's recovery efforts. Ivana Vladkova-Haller leads the IMF's work in Egypt. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So the Middle East and North Africa region, or MENA, is known for its natural resources, oil for the most part. But Egypt is a little different in that it has tourism and quite a bit of agriculture. How would you describe Egypt's economy, and how linked is it to the MENA region?
Thank you. So Egypt has enormous growth potential, much of this also coming through a resource that you didn't mention, which is its people. It has a very large, very young and very fast-growing population. And one key strategy to harness this enormous growth potential is to indeed focus quite a bit on building human capital, to provide the kind of education, the skills, the know-how that would allow this very large population to contribute to economic growth in Egypt. And the other aspect of harnessing this growth potential is creating high-quality jobs. And I think there, one thing that is worth mentioning as a salient characteristic of Egypt's growth model, especially in the recent years, is that it's been very state-led. The state has had a role in a lot of economic sectors, strategic and non-strategic. And part of boosting growth going forward, and also an aspect that the authorities themselves have recognized, is getting the state out of economic activity and making space for the private sector. And so as part of this, they have put together a state ownership policy in which they outline for themselves, for the public, for the population, their plans for withdrawing the state out of non-strategic sectors and allowing the private sector to step in, create those jobs, and at the same time, the ambition for the use of public resources is to try to improve the public finances so that they make space to spend more on education, on health, that will help boost that human capital. On trade, you mentioned tourism. That is indeed an important source of growth and of revenues for Egypt. Egypt is in a very favorable location for trade as well. But I think this issue of letting the private sector breathe, grow, create jobs, create economic activity, create products is important even in the context of trade. A lot of the trade in Egypt is the exports in Egypt are concentrated in large oil, agricultural, as you said, mineral sectors. But a lot of those enterprises are also state-owned. And a lot of the trade complexity, the complexity of the products, is actually quite low because we are talking about primary materials. And so one way, again, to increase the sophistication of the economy and the quality of the jobs is indeed to try to bring in the private sector, including through foreign direct investment, which is how you get some of this quick boost to technological know-how as well, to develop more sophisticated export products. Again, this is a coherent part of the strategy to improve the business environment and give the private sector breathing space.
And so the conflict in Gaza is right next door and it obviously has disrupted economies throughout the region. But what has it meant for Egypt in particular?
Sure. I mean, originally we expected tourism to be actually the main transmission channel to Egypt from the conflict in Gaza. And we did see some early hesitation on the part of tourists. I think we saw in the early days in October of last year some declines in forward-looking bookings. But actually, tourism has been quite resilient, particularly because tourism seems to respond quite a bit to the competitiveness of the tourism package. Uh-huh. And with the significant depreciation of the Egyptian pound, that has actually brought in quite a bit of an increase in tourism volumes. So tourism has been doing well. It did well last year. It's holding up this year. So that proved not to be an important channel of transmission of the shock. But what has been a fairly critical channel of transmission has been the disruption in the Red Sea.
Right.
So the rerouting of shipping routes away from the Suez Canal has actually been probably the most important impact on Egypt. It has an impact on global shipping, clearly, both in terms of how long it takes to transship goods now that they're not going through the Suez Canal, and also in the cost of shipping. So there's a regional and global implication for that, but the impacts on Egypt have been quite distinct, given that the Suez Canal is an important contributor to foreign exchange inflows to the Egyptian economy. They are an important taxpayer, and there's of course an economic activity disruption, and so that has been the main impact, and it's not trivial at all. In February already of this year, the Suez Canal revenues had declined by 50%, and now we're looking at even larger numbers. So it's a major shock.
Hmm. Yeah, and it doesn't look like there's an end to this anytime soon. So the geopolitics of the region, Gaza included, is contributing to the burden, but Egypt's economic woes began before Gaza. What does Egypt need to get through this, and what's your role, or I guess what is the IMF's role in helping them get there?
So maybe not a very satisfying answer, but mm-hmm. in terms of what Egypt and countries that like Egypt that face similar circumstances need is indeed policy discipline, and the kind of resolute policy implementation that brings back confidence, domestic and external confidence. The conflict in Gaza is one of many successive external shocks that Egypt and other countries have faced. The war in Ukraine is another example of a significant external shock that arrived some months earlier. But there is no substitute for good policies.
Right.
In the sense that what needs to be done is correcting the economic imbalances and also to cushion a little bit the pain of adjustment, bring in additional financing. And this is where the IMF steps in through IMF programs. This is where official partners step in that provide official support, bilateral support. This is where the World Bank steps in. And so you get a situation where you have multilateral and official financing that substitute a little bit for the lack of private sector financing to allow the authorities some space to correct policies. And we can talk what Egypt did specifically for to build confidence. And once confidence comes back, then you have kind of a much stronger and more robust normalization of financing conditions, of liquidity for businesses, and so on. And so the bottom line, unfortunately, is good policies.
Okay. All right. So, but talk to me a little about this IMF program that has gone through the process, or mm-hmm. at least has gone through most of the process. Where are we at with that program, and what might it offer to Egypt to help them get through it?
So, what we got through, or what the Egyptian authorities got through, is through stabilization. There was a significant disruption in economic activity, significant deterioration in certain indicators. We're talking about growth, we're talking about inflation, we're talking about the availability of foreign exchange. And so the efforts to date that the authorities have done have stabilized the economy. And so we've made it through stabilization, and this is very positive. And while challenges do remain, I think the Egyptian people can look forward to seeing an improvement in economic activity, seeing an improvement in the availability of a foreign exchange, seeing an improvement in inflation, i.e. seeing inflation start to come down. We're seeing some of these things already happen. But now there's actually a significant task at hand, which is economic transformation. And so the particular type of program that is in place in Egypt is not actually a stabilization program. The standby programs are our typical instrument for stabilizing economies. What's in place, the agreement with Egypt, is an extended fund facility, which is typically a longer term engagement that is very much focused on structural reform. And so, as I said, what remains now that stabilization is here, what remains is transformation. And there we're talking about the kind of things that I mentioned earlier, making sure that the growth model shifts from a growth model where the state has a very large role in economic activity to one where things shift, where reforms are put in place that allow the private sector to take over as an engine of growth. And we're talking about making sure that the private sector is not at a competitive disadvantage, for example, with the public sector, that it faces the same rules of the game, that it faces the same taxation regime, that it faces the same procurement regimes, that any pain points, for example, in customs clearance, which is a normal pain point for private sector companies in many countries, are fixed. So as to allow the private sector to be able to generate growth and jobs. So that is a big component of the authority's own commitment under the IMF program. And we're looking forward to working with the authorities in also developing some indicators to track progress under this, because it's a very complicated transformation of the economy. And I think for all of us, for the authorities that are pushing forward this reform, for us that are helping them with it and helping them monitor it, it's important to actually have a way to be able to measure progress. And that's one of the next conversations as to how we monitor this transparently over the remainder of the program.
So Egypt is very excited about this huge development project on its north coast. The Ras El Hekma project, as it's known, is said to be its largest foreign direct investment ever. I think the number is $35 billion at this point, and promises to attract millions of tourists. It'll also have a free economic zone for the IT industry, as well as schools and hospitals and all kinds of other stuff. How does the IMF see this project? I mean, what are the potential benefits on the macroeconomic level?
So one of the immediate benefits you potentially alluded to, which was an immediate, very large injection of foreign exchange liquidity at a time where this was a significant constraint for Egypt. And so this, together with the policy actions that the authorities took, together with the augmentation of the IMF program, together with a bigger package of international support, certainly turned around the outlook very, very quickly from an FX liquidity perspective. Now, of course, the next step is what are the authorities doing with this new resource? And from that perspective, what they have been doing is quite pragmatic. Part of the concern over Egypt's outlook was on the availability of FX. And so the authorities taking that and putting it into reserves to save the inflow has been a very prudent step. The other challenge that the authorities had faced was on the cost of servicing on debt. And so a significant proportion of those resources were also used to reduce expensive debt, to reduce the cost of servicing debt. So on both counts, on the external side and on the debt side, the authorities were wise to put away a significant proportion of those resources to boost their cushions. Going forward, of course, the way I understand it from the authorities themselves, the development of the Ras El Hekma region was always part of a broader strategy for urban development. It was part of a strategic vision for Egypt 2052, where the Ras El Hekma region was kind of next in line for urban development of the nature that you described. and is indeed intended, and we would expect that it would, in the near term, including boost capacity in the tourism sector and indeed position Egypt even further as a tourism destination, particularly alongside the North Coast. Mm. And so it does have, if executed well, the impact to boost growth, and in particularly to boost tourism revenues and activities that are linked around tourism, hopefully would spill over to the broader economy as tourists come in.
But there is skepticism among Egyptians about this project, with the government having a bit of a reputation of overspending on these mega projects. At this point, I guess you're confident that this one has been well thought through.
So we don't have obviously full information, neither do the authorities, on the exact plans, master plans for the development of the region. That should be defined in the coming months. Hmm. But with respect to the projects that you refer to, I think there has been a significant understanding at the policy level that the particular way in which investment has been taking place in Egypt does require a rethink of control over broad public investment in order to preserve macro stability. And by that, I mean that the proportion of investment spending that has been on budget and very visible and transparent and easily accounted for is not the full picture. We do know that much investment has also happened off budget through economic authorities, through other agencies of the broader state, if you wish. And that totality of investment needs to, going forward, be subject to broader controls, i.e. a committed ceiling on total public investment, in order to basically make sure that it doesn't put undue pressure on the economy, it doesn't put undue pressure on inflation, it doesn't put undue pressure on the currency.
And that leads me to my final question, and that is, are Egypt's economic foundations solid enough, do you think, to make all this new financing work to the betterment of the Egyptian economy?
I mean, that's essentially what the program itself is intended to ensure, in the sense that there is an agreement with the Egyptian authorities on the institutional framework and the reforms and the policies that would need to continue in order to provide the basis for the best use of these resources. And that, again, includes making sure that monetary and fiscal policy are focused on maintaining macroeconomic stability, monetary policy specifically on inflation, including by building capacity to be a central bank that can embrace an inflation targeting regime, which is a shift from the more or less fixed exchange rate of the past, making sure that fiscal policy is focused on reducing debt in order to reduce the vulnerability of the Egyptian economy to shocks, but also at the same time bring in additional revenues and create space for productive expenditure. We talked about the need to bolster expenditure on human capital, both in terms of education and health. And so the policies going forward, at least at the macro level, are going to be focused on this particular issue. And then there's the underlying reform agenda, where they would need to work on a new growth model for the Egyptian economy. And all of these elements are part of both the authorities' reform program and the IMF program, which is always intended to support the authorities' efforts in their objectives for achieving stability.
Well, it sounds promising. Ivana Fladkova-Haller heads the IMF's work in Egypt. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You'll find much more about the IMF's work in Egypt at imf.org. And look for more IMF podcasts wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X, what used to be Twitter, at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.